Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome into the Early Line. Live right here on SportsGrid on a Tuesday morning. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wrightside, hour number two, as we continue to talk about the Super Bowl, which will, of course, be the main story each and every day as we go and lead up to Super Bowl 56. And we want to give you the updates around two top tight ends and, of course, how it can really impact these lines. Tyler Higbee on the Rams, CJ Uzama on the Bengals, and ultimately two guys dealing with a knee injury whose statuses remain up in the air. Uncertainty around Higbee, they said it was encouraging news around Uzama. However, nothing slated just yet. And DRS, these are right now, I think, probably the two main injuries that we're going to have to follow, likely way more impact on a props market than perhaps the side or the total.
Yes, it is. And injuries are never a good thing. We don't root for those. But if these are the two injuries that we're worried about in the Super Bowl, these are pretty clean caps that you're going to take a look at. If you like the Cincinnati Bengals, as I've stated previously, CJ Uzama not playing is not going to deter you from taking the Bengals. And then if you take a look at the Rams here, you're not going to be deterred by taking the Rams because Tyler Higbee is going to be out of this game. But also, let's take a look at the impact here and how it does approach, and, you know, some game plans might change. If you look at Uzama for the season for the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, 49 catches, 493 yards, and 5 touchdowns. Pretty decent usage rate. But also, you've seen him come into his own in the playoffs before getting injured early in that playoff game. He had 13 catches for 135 yards in the playoffs. Take a look at Higbee on the opposite side. 61 catches, 560 yards, and 5 touchdowns here. Also, taking a look at before getting injured in that game, where he only had 18 yards, he had 6 straight games, he had at least 40 yards receiving. So these two guys were factoring in. The reason we're bringing this up here, where I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal, because there's two different scenarios that you usually take a look at, Kevin, right? When you have the player that gets injured in the game plan was already set to use that guy. Same thing with either tight end, it doesn't matter. You're looking at blocking arrangements here, you're looking at routes being run, comfortability here. Also, take a look at a guy taking the majority of the practice reps. Why? Because he's the starter. Now, here's what's key about this. Both of those guys get injured during the game. Both of these teams still end up winning their games, but also, you now have 2 weeks to get your backup guys ready to be the starter in this game, because if you're looking at both of those tight ends and they do play, you're still getting a lot of reps in practice with the ones and the twos there behind what you would have thought would have been Uzama and Higbee. So it's not that devastating, because NFL coaches are pretty smart. You know who you're going to be using coming into the game, but where the coaches really make their pay is in-game adjustments, where you lose your quarterback, you lose a wide receiver, you lose a running back, we have to adjust on the fly. If both of these guys don't play, the game plans will be intact over the next 2 weeks. So I don't see either one of these guys major differences in the overall game plan, scoring, or which way you want to handicap this game.
Where I think I do believe they are very impactful is going to be that props market. Maybe varies even strong, but that's where I think you see the impact. Now, on the Uzama side, to me, this is less about all of a sudden loading up on Drew's sample props, and it's more about your desire than try and get involved with the Tyler Boyds, even the Joe Mixons, the safety valves, or just, hey, listen, you know, Uzama's been a guy that they've been looking to target a little bit further down the field, right? More Jamar Chase, getting more involved with T. Higgins. I'll tell you right now, went through the Jamar Chase numbers last night. Numbers looking is posted right now to 78.5. On the FanDuel Sportsbook, plenty of reason to point yourself towards the over in that marker. If you're going to trust Joe Burrow to have a big game, it's going to line up with Ja'Marr Chase himself having a big game. Tyler Higbee, though, is very interesting because I would almost argue if you're a prop player and specifically a prop player to the over, you probably would be hoping that he misses this game. And I'll tell you why. First, we welcome the radio audience into the fold, and we appreciate all those tuning in to the Early Line on a Tuesday morning. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Rideside, right here, breaking down the tight end injuries surrounding the Super Bowl. Here's why I think DRS, if you're a prop player, Higbee missing the game, it makes your life easier. I think you're just betting Blanton without fear. For Higbee to come in, 2 catches, 18 yards on 3 targets early in this game, and for Blanton to turn around and go 5 catches on 5 targets for 57. The Higbee number was 39.5. We're not going Blanton into the mid-40s, into the 50s. So when you get that Blanton number under 40, I think you're just coming right back to it. Tight end position has been critical to Matthew Stafford over the back end of the season, and clearly Blanton will still be featured enough here in the passing game if he's the lead tight end.
You're right, and the trust level, too. Let's take a look at the trust level here because, as I said, you go into the game, Higbee is built into your game plan. You know, Blanton, that's basically a third tight end, stepped right into that game plan during the weekend, executed it fairly well. Those tight end screen passes, they were supposed to be for Higbee. He said, you know what, let's let the young kid run these, and he did it well. So now you're looking at a game where, let's just say he played in the previous game, Kevin, had 3 targets, dropped 2 of them here. You're like, hey, man, look, this guy's basically just a body at this point. But the fact that he performed in an NFC championship game and did that well, and primarily, Kevin, not expecting probably to even get the football in that game to step into a starting role, that bodes well here for the Super Bowl. And you're right. You can't line him up at 42.5 because of what you saw in the past game. You're going to line him up as saying, like, oh, he's still a backup tight end, doesn't get much usage right here. So you might be able to steal one where if he does get 4 targets and catches 3, that's probably 25 yards for him.
Those, though, will be the late additions. I think if Uzama's ruled out, you start to see a bump to some of these Bengals players. If Higbee's ruled out, then they will post the Blanton numbers, not listed yet right now. Cup number 104.5, lead man for the entire game. The lead man for the Bengals side is Ja'Marr Chase at, again, that 78.5 spot. All right, that will put a pause on the NFL. We come back. Let's talk some college basketball. Some big results last night. We'll break those down next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on SportsGrid. College basketball yesterday featured two ranked teams in action, and both ranked teams were able to get the job done. But I want to start in the ACC, as you have Duke and Notre Dame facing off, both entering 7-2 in conference play. And it didn't look like two teams playing on the same level, to be fair. The Duke Blue Devils win that basketball game at Notre Dame, 57-43, covering and going well under. I want to talk ACC updated odds, but before we do that, there's no reason not to emphasize a tremendous piece of handicapping here, and it's going to be something that'll be regularly featured on this show, which is great for all of you, it's great for me, and ultimately, it's what you're looking for here, which is Donnie starting to break down some of these college basketball team totals. Now, I'll do it for him. I'll put the little disclaimer out there. Not every team total is going to be this easy, but a Notre Dame team total under 69.5, landing at 43, is about as good as it gets. But also, I mean, look, DRS, we joke about it, but it's also what fits the iframe. Typically, way more often lining up the overs than the unders. Just early season, the process, what jumped out about Notre Dame, what kind of worked here, and, you know, also maybe a little more willingness to take some unders on these team totals.
Yeah, there's a lot of games out there each and every night in college basketball. You know, Monday night, a little bit light. Tuesday builds. Wednesday's usually a big night. Saturday's usually a monster day. But all throughout the week, there's a lot of advantages that you can look at. And I like to keep it simple here because, and you'll hear me say this a lot, Kevin, over the years. It wasn't long ago where you had a side that you could take, let's just say -3.5 or -4 in that Duke game, and a total for the game, and that's all you had to deal with here. But now the advent of so many different avenues to try to make some money, you try to dip your toes in the market and say, what makes sense? Because sometimes we take a look at the iframe where this really lines up for me or this doesn't here. And I've certainly gotten away from now. And I'll still take a side and I'll still take a total in the game if it makes sense. But specialization in games. And now that we take a look, and Kevin, you know, most people ask me, well, wait a second, Donnie. November, we had a whole month there, college basketball. December, the same thing, and January. Why are you waiting this long to get in? It's not so much that I don't like college basketball, because I really do. But from a betting perspective, I am a guy that needs numbers to also pass through the eye test. And the meaning being is, well, wait a second, Donnie. What do you mean? Like, I know you wait in NFL football for a couple weeks to get down, but why don't you just do that in college basketball? Wait for them to have 6 or 7 games, because you're not playing like competition. As we know, it's same thing like college football. Very rarely do you open the season. A couple teams do it where it's like a top 20 rivalry and you get after it. But most teams play a few cupcakes to start the season to ease their way in. Mm. So let's just say Alabama, for instance, forget about they played Miami last year. Let's just say they played, you know, Arkansas State, a couple directional schools, and then played Auburn the following week. So you say, like, man, they're the best offense in the country. They have the best defense in the country. They're going to kill Auburn, not necessarily because you're playing D2, D3 level competition before you then rise up to a challenge. The reason I'm bringing this up for a little bit of background here is because a lot of these basketball teams play a lot of cupcakes on the schedule. Talk about those buy-in games or those buy games that we like to say, like, hey, we're 11-0 at home to start the season. Exactly. You play D1AA, D2 teams, basically, until you're built up to the regular season. So now we sit in the month of February. A lot of these teams are at the halfway point or close to the halfway point in their conference schedule, which means like competition versus like competition. So case in point last night with Duke and Notre Dame. You had 2 7-2 teams heading in. Notre Dame playing unbelievable basketball, even at home. And I said to myself, just looking at the numbers, you know what made the most sense here? Duke's defense is elite. Notre Dame is a very good offense, but it's about matchups and styles make fights, as we like to say. If one team is an elite three-point shooting team and loves to shoot the three-point shot, that's where they're going to live and die. But you know what a bad matchup for that team is, Kevin? A team that is elite defending and elite at chasing you off the three-point line. So then you say to yourself, the same cap that we used last night, okay, if that's not working, let's go to plan B inside the arc. Well, just so happens, Duke is elite at defending inside the arc and doesn't foul. So if I'm going to tell you this without seeing how the game played out with only 43 points and an easy one, I like to shoot the three-point shot. The other team goes, you're not going to shoot it. Ooh, I make a lot of these. You know what? I'm going to put my hand in your face every time you shoot the three. Okay, I'll dribble around you, get to the rim. I'll block your shot. Oh, yeah, we get fouled a lot. We don't foul at all. Worked out perfectly last night. Under 69.5 at the FanDuel Sportsbook and at -105, cashed easily. That's just a little bit of nuggets when I take a look at, because no longer do you have to worry about offense and defense and home and away. Specialize. Take a look at what you think makes sense here and says, now hold on here. A good offense going against a great defense, how did it match up? It matched up perfectly last night with Duke A, an easy victory, and B, 100 total points in that game, and only 43 came from Notre Dame's side.
We talk about, you know, in-play sports tonight, the ability to follow these numbers the entire way. Sometimes there's, it's a great chance to buy in. You're like, at some point, this game's got to go over. With like 3 minutes left, you think they swung you at 98.5, and you sweated it out the entire way. I mean, Notre Dame hit a three, about 30 seconds left. I mean, that was the only number that they presented. Where if you just sat there and basically every 5 minutes put an alarm on your phone, and we're like, all right, I got to go rebet the under live in Duke, Notre Dame, and one of the all-time great college basketball games here. But where this game also was impactful, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, setting the game up, were the odds to win the ACC regular season. Duke went from a -170, -190, now above that $2 range at -210. Notre Dame falls back from +750 to 9-1, but they do remain the second choice on the board. Sandwiched in between them is Miami at +480. And I think this obviously is a game where you look at Duke, and I think it's fair to say that Duke's ceiling is probably far and above the rest of this conference. Duke has 2 losses in conference play. They lost by 2 to Miami, and they lost by 1 in overtime to Florida State. They certainly look like the crown jewel of this conference overall. However, they do have the same record right now with the Miami. You've got UNC, who's one game back with two games left, and the next game that those teams will play will be coming up this weekend, where UNC is going to be able to host that game here. I look at it right now. Who do you kind of pick out, right? The U and UNC jump out a little bit to me. If you want to try and go against Duke again at this minus 210 price for this regular season winner of the ACC, what do you see here when you look at these numbers right now, Donnie?
This is really interesting, because let's just take a look at the top of the ACC, Kevin. The Miami Hurricanes, 8-2 in conference play. The Duke Blue Devils, 8-2 in conference play. So technically, they're in a tie. Notre Dame Fighting Irish, 7-3. North Carolina Tar Heels, 7-3. Now, a couple other teams right behind them. There's a logjam here in the ACC. No longer is that the case where it looks like, you know, one or two teams might run away with it. Now, here's the interesting part, because if you take a look at the FanDuel Sportsbook and the odds that are listed, Duke at a minus 210, you're right. They improved last night, which was big, because they were tied technically with Notre Dame. Notre Dame drops back to a 9-1, Miami at plus 480, and North Carolina at 11-1. So we say, okay, halfway marker here in the ACC, about 10 games played between these teams. But let's look at the odds and where they make sense here. UNC and Duke, the biggest rivalry in the ACC. You see the Blue Devils, 8-2, North Carolina, 7-3. They still play each other twice, head-to-head, both home and away here. And typically, I didn't look at the schedule, but it's usually the very last game of the season also is included with UNC and Duke to sort of match that up. Now, let's also take a look at some underlying value, because most people say Duke's probably the best team overall. Miami's just a fluke there, up there at 8-2. But let's remember, there's so many teams in the ACC that you don't have a true round robin. And here's why this makes sense here, where maybe the Miami Hurricanes, even though they're not that pedigree program, might have a shoe in the door. Take a look at the two teams that they played this year that they don't have a matchup with once again. Miami beat Duke. Miami beat North Carolina. They don't play either of those two teams down the stretch. So if you go to the ACC standings, the reason why the Miami Hurricanes are listed at 8-2 in first place is because the tiebreaker is a head-to-head matchup, even if you've only played one time. So a de facto half-game lead on the Blue Devils, and the same thing with the Tar Heels. So if Duke and North Carolina end up splitting their games, and maybe Notre Dame falters, whoever it might be, those Miami Hurricanes at plus 480, even though, as I said, they're not a sexy pick and you're expecting them to fall off, but they have a couple cards, like an ace in the hole on both of those wins where they hold the tiebreakers. That could be interesting as the ACC plays out and maybe get a nice price at that plus 480 here.
Yeah, and look, you have to think right now, the home game against Notre Dame, they'll be a favorite. They go to Virginia. It could be a look ahead spot, though, for the Cavaliers, who then on the Monday will be playing against Duke. Home against Georgia Tech, you anticipate, again, that you will be favored in their home games. And why do I bring that up? If they can win their next three, Duke drops a game, UNC drops a game. All of a sudden, that separation is creating that 480 down. More college basketball on the other side.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Big 12 as they begin today, but also yesterday. Baylor Bears started out this season like, man, this is the group. They are maybe the new, you know, blue blood right in college basketball. Hit a little bit of a lull, and that was going to all of a sudden transition to like a panic button. If they lost at home to a West Virginia team that's having a subpar season for their standards. Ultimately, though, an injured Baylor team shows their mettle, come back, win that game, 50 points scored in the second half. But right now, you set up the Big 12 championship odds, or the regular season. This is not the conference tournament that's going to be coming around. It's, you know, for the best regular season record here, Kansas is the favorite at plus 140, and then it's Baylor at plus 170. DRS, are you looking at one of these top two teams, or perhaps, you know, one of the Texas schools at that 5-1 range?
Yeah, you're probably still zeroing in on Kansas and Baylor, but they do have two games to play. So if they actually split those games, it'll be up in the air throughout the rest of the conference. But also, you're right, Texas Tech Texas, Iowa State, you know, TCU. It's a very deep conference from top to bottom at this point. But if you're asking me, like, on this day, it'd be nice if we already had, like, a Kansas-Baylor game. Like, oh, man, Kansas really put Baylor away, and that game was on the road. Now they're going to have to come and play at, you know, at the Fog and see if they can come up with a road victory. It's not the case here. Pedigree maybe for Baylor. Hey, we just won a national championship. We'll be able to hold up. I get that. And they had one of those starts to the season that we love and then sort of hit that little bit of a lull. So if you're looking right now, plus 140, plus 170, I do think it's a toss-up. So right now, for me, in the Big 12, just lean towards the better price, plus 170 on Baylor.
The interesting thing is Baylor's next game at Kansas, right?
Yeah.
What's that line going to be, and how different will the money line be from that minus, or that rather, plus 170 marker? It's not going to be plus 170, but again, the difference is, let's just say it's plus 125, plus 130, right? You don't have to tie your money up. You don't have a bunch of other results that you have to try and factor into it there. And of course, if Kansas does win that game, then that, you know, number on Baylor could go a little bit longer and you'd still be live. However, Baylor could be the favorite if Kansas loses to Iowa State tonight. So let's start our preview for tonight's card. And you've got another rank game here. Look, Iowa State has been oddly one of my favorite teams to talk about each and every time, because none of their numbers, or at least kind of their projection rankings, right, say that they're one of the elite teams. Their numbers are never priced like an elite team, but they pretty consistently get the job done. A 16-5 record overall, the 20th team in the country, is a 4.5-point home dog to number 10 Kansas. And DRS, I know you're going to throw the people a lot of numbers, and I ultimately would value those over some trends. But in terms of who's been helping the people and who hasn't, you've got an Iowa State team that is 8-2 against the number this season as an underdog. They've been a dog at home three times this year, and they've covered all three of those games. Meanwhile, Kansas is 8-12 against the number as a favorite. They played Iowa State. They won at home by one. Didn't even come close to covering a double-digit point spread. They've only covered one basketball game in their last seven. Kansas is not covering. And I don't even know if Kansas is really playing all that well, as they just got absolutely blasted by Kentucky. Again, Iowa State continues to find a way. 4.5 is the number. Is that enough to back the Cyclones, or does maybe a total jump out a little bit more?
I think the side might be enough to bet here with KU here at -4.5. And here's the reason why I think Kansas is a little bit better. You have 10 teams in the Big 12. I know it doesn't sound right. Hey, but it's 12 teams, right? No, it's only 10 teams here. But there's a lot that Iowa State that does not do well, but particularly from Kansas on the offensive side. Number one in conference play efficiency. So you could take that on the road, meaning you're probably not turning it over all that much, but they're actually sixth in conference play out of 10 teams at turning it over. And the key thing is here, what might keep Iowa State in this game, Kevin? You know who's number one in conference play at turning over your opponent? That's the Iowa State squads. But also, let's take a look at what makes a lot of sense here. Getting to the free throw line. You know who fouls more than anybody else in conference play? Iowa State does. Decent three-point shooting team in Kansas, and also defending inside the arc. You know who's dead last in conference? You guessed it again. Iowa State at defending. So I think Kansas has a nice advantage here on offense compared to defense going up against that Iowa State defense. But here's what I like even more. Let's take a look at Kansas. Not a great defensive team, but what they do well might be able to give Iowa State some issues. If we look at turning your opponent over, Kevin, dead last in the conference on defense is Kansas, which means you can run your offense where not a lot of pressure, not a lot of full court pressure, and you can get your shots up. And particularly where that makes some sense here is because turnover rate here for Iowa State, Kevin, out of 10 teams in conference play, they're seventh at it. So if you had a team like Kansas that, let's just say, is 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 in the upper echelon of that conference at turning it over, that could be an issue. But I think Iowa State's going to get their shots. Now, here's where it comes into. Because, again, we talk about 10 teams in conference play. You know, getting to the free throw line for Iowa State, ninth in conference play out of 10 teams. So you better be knocking down your three-point shots. They love to shoot the three, Kevin. The number two team in conference at volume from behind the three-point line is Iowa State. Here's the issue. You know who's number two in conference at chasing you off of the three-point line? That's the Kansas Jayhawks. And adds a little bit of salt in those wounds here. So if you want to shoot the three, and we're not going to let you shoot the three, similar to what I was just talking about with Duke and Notre Dame, check this out, Kevin. Number one in three-point defense, allowing only 28.8% of three-point shots to go down. That's the Kansas Jayhawks. So if we're talking about an offense that isn't that fluid, means it turns it over a little bit too much, doesn't get to the free throw line, loves to shoot three-point shots, but the Achilles heel is not for Kansas from actually being behind the three-point range. That's where they defend that well. Maybe getting to the line and saying, okay, we can see what we can do. We're inside the arc. I don't think it matches up all that well. So again, if you want to shoot three-point shots, and I'm not going to let you shoot them, and when you do, I'm going to defend them, that leads me to Kansas here. It might be a square play for me, Kevin, -4.5 for Kansas, but I just like that matchup the most out of any single thing in this game, chasing that three-point shot away for Iowa State.
And I don't think it's square to take Kansas, right? The one thing I'll say when it comes to trying to back some trends is, ideally, you've been able to make money off of them leading up. We've talked, five, six Iowa State games this year, right? And more often than not, they've been able to cover. If you are 4-1, right, betting on Iowa State this year, you can get to the window and you can trust them. In a vacuum that just is this game, maybe the numbers line up towards Kansas, right? And I think that that's kind of the stuff that you have to weigh here. Ultimately, Kansas is a 4.5-point favorite for a reason. So I absolutely can respect that. We have just seen the Cyclones find a way. Like, the incredible thing, Donnie, is when these teams played at Kansas, like, Kansas won, Iowa State covered. Iowa State has been one of those teams that can lose and cover, right? They just find a way. We'll see if they're able to do that here, though. It's a tough matchup against a Jayhawks team that should be fired up after getting embarrassed at home by Kentucky. Let's keep it in the Big 12. Texas Tech against Texas. For me, this Texas team feels like an underachieving group. It feels like a group that's left a lot to be desired, yet still inside the top 25 here when you enter into the latest AP poll, right? They, however, a 5-point dog going to Texas Tech. Now, this is Narrative City, right? DRS, Beard goes back to Tech. I want to ask you that off the bat. How much, if at all, does that factor into you breaking this game down?
Not all that much. I mean, outside of, you know, the coach getting all warm and fuzzy feelings, the players have moved on. I'm sure the fans are going to be like, hey, you know, you left us for an in-state rivalry. But if I'm looking at this game going, which one's going to tip the lever? Oh, yeah. Texas Tech's going to be extra motivated to beat Tech. They already hate Texas as it is. It's a little bit more fuel to the fire, but Kevin, no, there's no discrepancy for me where I'm saying, like, you know what? I don't know who's going to win this game. Oh, yeah, look who's coming back here. Yep, more added advantage for Texas Tech. I don't see that. I don't. I would like to, but I don't.
I think here's the part of the reason why is, in the same breath, I can say Tech can't let him come into their building and let him win. And in the same, again, Beard has to prove why he left, right? So the motivation will be there for both of these sides. But again, speaks volumes that the Red Raiders are favored in this basketball game, right? I mean, at the end of the day, both sitting 5-3 in conference. We just talked those Big 12 regular season odds. Choices 3 and 4 lining up here. It would be a big boost for whomever does win this basketball game. When you go through these numbers, DRS, that low, low total.
Yep.
Sell me on an over.
No.
I'm begging you. I'm begging you. Please. What lines
I don't know
up
if
for
I
this
can.
One?
I don't know if I can. Like, you, and also, so sometimes you look at these numbers, right? So you say 122.5. And I'm leaning towards the under. So do the quick math in your head. Like, if both of these teams get to 60 points, you're going to get this over, right? So you're saying to yourself, like, well, how can I take the under? Well, here's why. Two teams that play at a glacial pace out here. I mean, forget about running it up. You can have a 2-0 break, Kevin. They're pulling out. They're going to run their full set of offense looking for the best shot. But if you take a, you know what I mean? Like, forget about the fast breaks. Yeah. Let's pull it out. Let's show the people how efficient we can be. But both of these defenses, Kevin, quickly, very good. Texas Tech, number 2 overall in conference for efficiency on defense. Texas, number 3. But also, you're taking a look at two teams that don't shoot the three-point shot all that well. 32% for Texas, 26% dead last for Texas Tech. Both of these teams very good at defending inside the arc. Number 1 team, Texas Tech's defense in the interior. Number 3 in the Big 12 is Texas's defense at about 46% that they give up. Here's the issue, which may help you get this total if you're looking to back it. So if you want that one glimmer here, even though the pace is going to be slow, number 3 and number 1 at getting to the line in conference play, both of these teams, and each one of these teams, Kevin, 7th and 8th in defense at letting you get to the free throw line. So make your free throw shots. Maybe you can have a chance here. But that under 122, that's going to be live in this one. This is going to be a slow tempo.
I know that you like your pain totals in the NFL. Pain totals in college basketball always catch my eye. And that one screams pain. More breakdown next year on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Preview continues on a Tuesday. Let's stick to the college game as we have one of the most interesting teams in recent college basketball history, the Alabama Crimson Tide, making a trip to Auburn here, the number one team in the country. And this is exactly who Alabama likes to play. They like to play the best teams in the country. They played Auburn already, almost took them down at home. They were favored in the basketball game. Now a seven-point dog coming off of the upset of the Baylor Bears. That total checks in nice, mid-150 range there, DRS. Can Bama once again shock, I don't even know, that might be too strong of a word, a top team here in the country?
I mean, they could at this point here, but the thing that you should be able to get shocked on is a total in this one. You know, DRS sometimes, you know, heading towards the unders now, not really the case in this one. You're going to get tempo out of both teams and a healthy 155.5, and it does make a little bit of sense because when you try to zero in, Auburn actually has a very good defense, number three overall in conference play, effective field goal percentage, which means you mix in, you know, the turnovers, the twos and the threes. They're number one in conference play. So it's no easy meal ticket to try to get after. But the one equalizer in college basketball is if you shoot a lot of three-point shots and make a lot of three-point shots, you could do some damage. Now, here's the thing. You're talking about 14 teams in the SEC. You know who's 13th in field goal percentage from behind the arc in conference play? It's Alabama. But here's where they try to, you know, slide by because they shoot close to 50% of their shots from three-point range. So if you're only hitting at 27%, it's not great, but there are games where you might hit 35% of those volume shots and you'll keep yourself in the game. But here's where the crux of the argument's going to come down to. It's Auburn's offense versus a bad defense for Alabama. If you're looking at effective field goal percentage, which means that this team is efficient and gets their open looks from two and three, Auburn's number two in conference play. Turning the basketball over, Kevin, number three. So they're not giving you freebies here. And also looking from a defensive side on Alabama, Kevin, turning you over out of 14 teams in conference play, they are 11th. How about rebounding percentage for Auburn? Top five in the conference at getting after the offensive glass. It was a bad defensive rebounding team. Alabama getting to the free throw line. Auburn doesn't do it all that much because, you know, they like to shoot the three-point shot, maybe not looking to get in the paint so much. But one team that fouls a lot is Alabama. And also inside the arc, when you're taking a look at most of the time with these two tempo teams, which means you're getting a lot of fast break points, 56% from inside the arc for Auburn. So everything really matches up on that side of it. But also when you're trying to take a look at what you do well, we talk about the three-point shots, 27% for Alabama. Auburn is not electric from three-point range, Kevin, at 32%. But here's where the issue comes in again. You look at a team that likes to have a nice mix of inside-outside game, which means they're not heavily reliant on overall shooting the three-point shot. About 40% of their total shots come from three-point range, so a little bit more coming from inside the arc. But you're also looking at Alabama, 10th in the conference at defending the three-point shot at 33%, but 10th in conference play at letting you shoot it. Auburn here is the linchpin. Do I want to lay the 7 points in this game at a rivalry game? Not necessarily here, but if both of these teams ratchet it up here, the tempo is going to be there with fast breaks where there's a legitimate chance they have a great shot at going over the 155.5 here.
Look, I think wanting to play a total in this game is exciting. I'm glad that that is where the breakdown points. As far as the side goes, though, Alabama is what everyone says they are, an up and down, chasing their tail kind of team. They covered their first two games of the season, consecutive covers. Then they had a nice little three-game cover against Drake on a neutral, Miami on a neutral, and Gonzaga on a neutral. And that was November 26th to December 4th. They have not covered consecutive games since that three-game window that took us from November to the very first game that they played in December. Up and down, up and down, up and down. Now you go to Auburn, right, who has covered all but one game at home this season, and I know the seven looks strong. You don't think, like, we talk again, Donnie, about lines. Alabama just beat Baylor, and they're giving you 7 points. These teams played, right? Alabama enjoyed a second-half lead at one point there. It doesn't surprise me at all if this ends up being a big-time Auburn victory here as they continue to make their claim for being the number one team in the country, despite, by the way, not even having the best odds for the national championship of any SEC team. Let's talk a little Big East here. DRS, UConn, and Creighton will be the first game of any ranked teams playing here as UConn, the one team, by the way, that did beat Auburn, number 17 in the country, hosts Creighton as a double-digit favorite. That total checks in that mid-130s range here. As Creighton has been a team that has some, you know, decent wins on the resume, but this may be a tough task because UConn has been really finding their groove in conference. What jumps out when you see these two Big East teams?
Yeah, just a little bit of background check on these two squads, right? 12-7 on the season for Creighton, 4-4 in conference play, including losing their last two games. If we look at UConn, 15-4 on the season, 6-2 in conference play, 1-5 straight. Now, this has a lot of feels for me, Kevin, of what we looked at last night when the Duke Blue Devils took on Notre Dame and said, you know what? That defense really matches up well with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Let's take a look at today. Same thing with UConn. Let's just focus on, forget about UConn's offense going against Creighton's defense, because Creighton actually has a decent defense here in conference play. There are 11 teams in the Big East. Creighton's offensive efficiency is 9th out of 11, but here's where we're going to get down to it. Turnover percentage, which means that every time they have the basketball, 23% of their possessions, Kevin, that's a quarter of their possessions, end up in a turnover. Offensive rebounding percentage, 8th out of 11 teams. How about getting to the free throw line? Because the one thing UConn does is they foul a little bit here, but you usually want to expose it. So you say, okay, if there's 11 teams, let's let Creighton be in what? Top 2, 3, 4, or 5. No, they're 10th in conference play at getting to the line. So let's flip it over for some individual statistics here, right? 3-point shots. 40% of the shots that come from Creighton are behind the 3-point line. Here's the issue, Kevin. Only make 30% of those. So again, 11 teams in conference play in the Big East. You know what they had? 10th overall. Now you say, okay, you can get maybe some of these 3-point shots up here versus Connecticut. They defend at 36%, which isn't great. It's 8th out of 11 teams. Okay, that's the chance that we might be able to get in. But how about this? If 40% of the shots, which is good for 3rd in conference play at shooting volume for 3-point shots for Creighton, guess who's number one at chasing you off the line? That is UConn. And that's always a problem because if they don't want you to shoot the three, just, hey, if you're wide open, you can knock them down. That's great if you have a lazy defense. Mm-hmm. But if you have a defense that's really getting up to you and chasing you off the line, that limits the chances here. It also makes you shoot shots a lot faster than what you normally have. So let's just say, okay, let's get into the paint and make it work that way. 3rd in conference at 51% basically from inside the arc for Creighton. Like, that is fantastic. So if the 3-point shots, Kevin, aren't going down, we can drive to the rim, hit those little 15-foot elbow shots. Not the case. Number one by a wide margin in Big East play. Number one at 41.6% from 2-point shots, which means you are going to get defended here. And you know why? Guess who's also number one at blocking shots in the Big East? UConn. So, if I'm going to chase you off the 3-point line, I'm going to defend the 3-point line, I'm going to force you to get into the paint and then say, I have the best defense in conference play in the paint, any racing shots, it just factors in really well. And also, take a look at Creighton, not the fastest tempo team. Now, yesterday, we looked at Notre Dame, was like, ooh, might be a white knuckler here at 69.5. I hope they can keep under 70. Looking at the FanDuel Sportsbook today, Creighton's team total, 61.5 at minus 102, and you know it. I'm going under that. Let's hold Creighton into the 50s, UConn. You can do it.
Tough news for 50s, the Blue Jays pain. There. Oh, yeah, it certainly, that one, I'd rather get involved with the Texas game where the team total starts in the 50s. You know what I mean? Just paying right off of the bat there. A little more enticing. Let's make this transition over towards the NBA. The big game that jumps out, of course, is going to be Phoenix and Brooklyn. 7-point favorites, the Phoenix Suns. 7 points. Shows the state of the Brooklyn Nets. Kevin Durant injured. Kyrie Irving should be available. And Harden is questionable, which is why you don't have any Brooklyn props right now. The Phoenix Suns finish up another ridiculous month of basketball, 14 games, 13-1 record. And we had a conversation a little bit about this last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, I think last week, about Devin Booker versus Chris Paul for the MVP. And I know Devin has all the points, but Chris Paul is still kind of the star of this show here. And Chris Paul and a Suns victory and a double-double hit in a 10 of the 14 games. Incredibly, it's hit in six of its last seven. Yes, I found a way to get to the window for the one loser. It is what it is on that there ultimately. But the other thing I'll bring up is his points prop listed at 17.5. Six consecutive games for Chris Paul with 20 or more points and, or excuse me, rather 18 or more points, right? And he has 20 plus in five of the six. Chris Paul is just playing realistically MVP level basketball. And I know maybe some of the advanced numbers won't shine on him the way that they do Nikola Jokic. But if Steph Curry is going to be as high up on this board because of the Warriors' record, and if ultimately Ja Morant's going to be as high up on this board because of the Memphis Grizzlies' record, then when you right now go to the NBA MVP market and you see Devin Booker at 35-1 and go to Chris Paul at 65-1, that to me is undeniable value. I look at this game, there's a lot of question marks around Brooklyn. There really aren't many question marks these days, Donnie, around Chris Paul and the Phoenix Suns as he and this team just consistently get the job done.
No, it's been outrageous. And you bring up that last little run that he's had here, which has been incredible. Like, he almost had a 20-20 game. Like, not like assists, 20 points and 20 assists. Yeah. That's almost impossible to comprehend. And then you throw in 8 rebounds on top of it. I would have to say, if he went 20-20-10, that would have been one of the most outrageous stat lines I've ever seen in the NBA. But if we're talking about from a game perspective, Phoenix is favored, and rightfully so, they should be. So we like to take a look at the side, per se, and the total. Okay, I hear you on that. But if we're looking from the props market here, I mean, Chris Paul is an absolute monster. Points, rebounds, and assists, it's going to be sky high for tonight. Devin Booker's points prop, it's going to be sky high. Why? Because the Nets don't play that great a defense. But if I'm honestly looking, Kevin, in this game here, and let's just say it has the potential for the Phoenix Suns to be a blowout winner in this game, do you know who's still going to play a lot in this game, regardless of blowout status? Kyrie Irving and Patty Mills. You're talking about those usage rates from the three-point line for Patty Mills. If Harden and Irving play, they leave that guy wide open at the three-point line, so his volume to shoot 10 or more three-point shots is going to be high. The same thing with Kyrie Irving. He only plays on the road. If there's a blowout, you're like, hey, Kyrie, sit out the late third quarter and fourth quarter here because we need to rest you up because you have back-to-backs or three straight games. No, he's only playing on the road. He's going to get his minutes when need be. So even if Harden plays or doesn't play, I'm looking right away to Kyrie Irving and Patty Mills because that usage rate blowout. You know, we always worry about the Knicks, like, oh, blowout in the fourth quarter. I don't think you're going to have to worry about it because I think Patty Mills with 4 minutes left to go in a 20-point game is still going to be jacking up three-point shots, Kevin.
Please don't talk about the Knicks when we don't have to. I'm begging you, please. I just can't.
16
can't
points, runaway dub. What, 40 points for Fournier last night? I didn't check the final box.
Yeah, man. He's still out Bing there. And I'm just wondering when he can check back into the game. You did enough, pal. First quarter was enough. Take it easy here. One thing I will also let people know tonight, Golden State, second leg of a back-to-back. No props, only a 2.5-point favorite in San Antonio. A classic early line watch and wait on injury news for that game. Who's in and who's out? DRS's man, DeJounte Murray, I'm sure, will be getting after it here. Pause on the early line. One more segment to go. You got to listen up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Final segment of the day right here on the early line. 3-2. Wednesday, right here on Sports Grid, Sirius XM channel 159. Donnie Wrightside, Kevin Walsh carrying you through from 7 to 9 before we hand it off to the morning after and Ben Stevens. But before we do that, some big news, breaking, not breaking. Will it happen? Won't it happen? But you know what you need to do? Listen up. Ah, yes. Will Tom or won't Tom? Is he going to retire? Is he going to play? If you listen to Jason Lockenfour over the weekend, he said Tom's retiring. ESPN still running montages daily now since that news broke on Saturday of the greatest of all time at the quarterback position. Now, before I tell you whether or not Tom Brady should retire or not retire, let's do a little trivia here. And this is great for the Sports Grid Network. 1996 to 1999 college football. Can you off the top of your head name two college football players? I can. You know why? One's Tom Brady and one is DRS. So file that one in your annals there so you can get back to it later and ask your friends and family who those two college football players were. But now let's get into Tom Brady, will he or won't he? I'm actually surprised that he's considering retirement right now. 22 years of football should be enough for any man, but not for Tom Brady. As you've seen many interviews that he's given out, football is his first love. What do you mean when I'm done with football? What am I supposed to do with the rest of my life? But he continually brings up family as children now. You want to see them grow up because most players in the NFL basically retired by 32 with a young family. They can watch their children grow up, go to high school and play football games, which is probably what Tom Brady wants to do. But the simple fact, the way it happened, where it was unceremoniously knocked out of the playoffs, didn't get one last run at the Super Bowl, I'll be surprised if he doesn't again try to get back to that plateau of the Super Bowl. It doesn't look like it's going to happen because, as we like to say in this business, where there's smoke, there is absolute fire. And if word is leaking out from Tom Brady's camp that he's thinking about retirement, there is a really good chance that Giselle and the family won out and Tom Brady will head into retirement after 22 spectacular seasons in the NFL. It is what it is. We know you guys got to do now. Hang on for Ben Stevens in the morning after over the next 3 hours right here on Sports Grid.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save